The Influencer's Edge is brought to you by the Rapid Sales Accelerator. If you're ready to skyrocket your sales by 30% or more in just 90 days, then you need to claim your free training right now. You'll learn 4 words that will compel your prospects to trust you like they were children within the first 3 to 5 minutes of any conversation across any platform and any medium. You'll learn how to give your prospects objection amnesia to crush objections like, I need to talk to my spouse, or I need more time to think it over, or it's too expensive. And finally, you'll get a free recorded audio training that will install unbelievable attitudes for success and wipe out any limiting beliefs. So if you'd like to claim your free training now, go to www.paulrossbook.com. Do it before your competition does it now. Welcome to the Influencer's Edge. This is the place where you come to get the latest breakthroughs, cutting-edge insights, tools, and techniques to leapfrog over the pack in sales, persuasion, and influence. Be sure you visit our website at www.theinfluencersedge.com. And while you're there, subscribe to us via your favorite network. Now sit back, tune in, and enjoy today's episode.
Welcome back to the Influencer's Edge. I was teasing my next guest, or today's guest, about his crazy physical achievements. I'm looking at all those medals back there. His name is Nick Klingensmith, correct?
Correct. Nick, we got it.
In the green room conversation, when I complimented you on all those medals, what did you say? Respond, tell the audience what you said.
I had to give my wife credit for what is probably 15 to 20% of hers.
Okay. And I had asked Nick, is that because she kicked you in the ass to make you finish these things, or what? So we've done well over 200 shows. I'm going to tell you, your biography is certainly one of the, it would be safe to say your biography is one of the most interesting. So let's dive into it, shall we?
Absolutely.
So after being thrown out of the Las Vegas hotel in a drunken haze, pause right there. Were they violently throwing you out, or just escorting?
If I didn't comply, that was what was going to happen.
They told you that?
Yeah. I found myself in what I call a bit of a brownout, kneeling on the floor of the hallway of the Aria Hotel in Las Vegas. And I was surrounded by security and a couple cops, and they were telling me that I had to go. They told me I was in a fight, which I was not a violent drunk. I was happy life at the party, drunk. But here's the part of the story that I hadn't mentioned yet, is the part I remember was trying to have sex with a hooker in a broom closet down the hall from where my girlfriend was sleeping. And when I left the broom closet to go to my room to get a condom from the room that my girlfriend was sleeping in, the hooker disappeared with my money. And who would have thought the business practices of a hooker would have been so deceptive?
Let's just say your decision-making process was a little altered, and move on from there. Jeopardizing his career and relationships, Nick had to make a change. A 4-time cancer survivor. Whoa, pause right there. What? We could have a whole 2 or 3 episodes on what that taught you. What kind of cancer did you get?
So I've had, out of the 4 times I've had cancer, 3 times have been thyroid. The first time they supposedly took out my entire thyroid, but it turns out they only took out half the thyroid. The second time they took out the thyroid, but my doctor at the time told me something that was kind of helpful to hear. And he's like, you'll probably get cancer again.
Oh, he's nice.
Well, he's like, you know, there are probably residual cells or things, you know, within your body still. It's hard to get it all. He goes, but your prognosis will still be good. But the thing about cancer is once it touches you, it's always part of your life. You know, there's never such a thing as all clear, and I just never worried about it again. The 4th time I had cancer was different, though. It was actually in the back of my head. It was treated at a different part of the hospital, and there was no residual after that. They took it out. I didn't need radiation. I didn't need chemo. Good. I didn't need radioactive
Thank
iodine.
God.
I was just.
Thank God. We could go into an entire discussion, we don't have time, about how that affected your views about the meaning of life and our but we don't have time. Recovering alcoholic with herniated discs, nerve damage, sleep apnea. Acne? Is acne in there?
Not anymore.
He defies it all when he finds obstacle course racing. He does. Wow. What is obstacle course racing? Like what it sounds? How are those sprints or long races?
Yes. Have you heard of mud runs?
I have seen them promoted, but right. I've never gone.
It's like that, but on steroids. So this Saturday, for example, I was in Jacksonville, Florida with my wife, and we did a 10K obstacle course race. It was a muddy course. I was on a ranch somewhere, and there was about 25 or 30 obstacles that include climbing over walls, jumping over strange hurdles, carrying heavy objects, traversing various overhead type multi-rigs, climbing ropes.
Wow. Learn to kill people. Learn to kill people. You can be Delta Force.
Well, I'm pretty good with this. I'm pretty good throwing a spear.
All right. We'll keep that in mind next time we decide to put you off. He's completed over 100 Spartan races, 6 major marathons, several ultras, scores of other obstacle and endurance events. As someone who's walked the path of a sales professional, Nick is an expert in propelling other achievement-driven professionals and leaders to overcome fear and rejection and push past self-limiting doubts. He's raw, and he's a raw and passionate storyteller who holds back nothing, obviously, when revealing who he's used to be and the person he is now. Let's talk about resilient mindset, because you are not a teacher, not just a teacher of this, you've lived it. So you've got to tell me personally, because I go through challenges, everyone's gone through challenges. How the hell do you take on a resilient mindset to deal with cancer, first of all? And then how does that map over into being resilient with sales?
So here's the interesting part. I wasn't resilient during cancer. I was a victim. I was a whiny victim. The first time I was diagnosed with cancer, I was scared and I focused more on why me, God, why me? By the time I was diagnosed with cancer for the second time, I had already been diagnosed with diabetes, sleep apnea, and had nerve damage. And I continued on with this victim mindset of why does this keep happening to me? As it moved on, my alcoholism began to really take form. And so by the third time I got cancer, I was relieved to have got cancer because it gave me the excuse I needed to drink.
Oh, wow.
I continued just building up this armor and convincing myself that it was me against the world and me versus cancer and, you know, just picking this fight. But the thing is, you can't have a me versus the world attitude if you don't really feel that you're a victim of the world. And I did. By the time I got cancer the fourth time, I was convinced that not only I wasn't afraid to die anymore, I was convinced that I would. So I wasn't gritty and resilient. In fact, I wept and held back tears most days on the way to work and repeated to myself, you can only get cancer so many times and not die. The thing that changed my mindset was when my boss walked into my office shortly after I had beaten cancer the fourth time decisively, and he asked me to do a Spartan race with him. And at the time, I wasn't interested at all. I looked at him and I was like, no, fuck no. Like that's an 8 to 10 mile trail race with obstacles. That seemed absolutely miserable to me. And I had no intention of making myself that uncomfortable. But what I found out that night is I reflected upon my story and all the things that I had been through. And the hard truth really set in on me. I hadn't overcome my adversity. I had only survived it. I wasn't resilient. I was holding on by a thread. I was surviving. And through this adventure of going through obstacle course racing and really just redefining everything that I believed about myself. And let me just give you one example of something. When was the last time you went outside and played and didn't worry about getting your pants dirty?
When I was a kid. Well, I won't go that one. Well, never mind that one. But we can't talk about that on the air. It would be too distracting. And I don't think the woman even remembers me. But no, that would be a kid. That would be when I was a kid.
Exactly, right? And that's what my first experience was like, being out in the mud, in the wilderness, in the woods, in the world, right? It wasn't me against the world, it was me in the world. And it was liberating to just feel like a kid again and not afraid to get dirty. And it stripped away all the self-doubt and limitations that I had placed on myself, this bubble that I was living in. And so throughout that process, I was then able to realize over the time with obstacle course racing that not only have I overcome my adversity, but now that I can overcome any adversity. So the mindset shift occurred after I had been through everything and began to take charge of my life. And I could see the pattern and the tragedy and the triumph and accepted that mindset was a choice. So it wasn't like an overnight process. And I don't believe that we are born. Well, we probably are born resilient, but from the very first day we're born, we strip away that resilience a little at a time. And if you aren't going through hard things, you're not prepared to go through hard things.
I think if you're not going through hard things, you're not paying attention, because life is inherently filled with difficult situations. I'm not quite a Buddhist, but I like their insight, which is life is filled with unpleasant and even painful experiences. That's how it just effing goes. But this shift in your attitude, it couldn't have just been from a conversation with your boss. It had to have taken time to take hold, because those old beliefs have momentum. They have familiarity. Is that correct? Or
absolutely.
Born again.
The first race really opened my eyes. But the thing is that I didn't just sign up for a race, right? It was 9 weeks away. I wasn't athletic. I ran a little bit here and there, but I didn't do much. The very next day, I woke up at 5 a.m. to train before work. And to me, that was unheard of at the time. I was the guy who woke up with the alarm, like, blaring for hours. I arrived at work 5 seconds before I was supposed to be there. So right off the bat, I woke up and I began to redefine everything that I knew about myself. But waking up early to train led to going to bed on time and giving myself the first regular sleep cycle I'd ever had, which then led to stretching so I could recover more, which then led to wanting to increase my mental toughness. So I began meditating.
I'm a meditator.
It was through that process, though, that I really found sort of a mind, body, spirit connection. And the way that I knew I was changing was through other people, the way that other people responded to me and the way that other people would act around me. And one guy who was a subordinate of mine, who I wasn't even very close with, I was surprised by this. And I'm glad he said it. He even remarked to me that he's like, you know, you used to be kind of a dick. I like this new you. And I realized he was right. I liked who I was becoming. I liked doing these hard things. And about 7 months after I started doing obstacle course racing, the day after my third year anniversary of being sober, I'm sitting at a red light and I got hit by a car.
Oh, fuck.
That's where I got the rest of my herniated discs. That's where I got nerve damage.
Fuck.
I went home that day. My cat of 12 years died.
Pause. This is painful for me, because I know I'm a cat. I'm a crazy cat guy. I have two babies, and I had to make an emergency vet trip with one who was having epileptic seizures. And I'm so sorry that, you know, cancer and all that, but you lost your baby cat. That's devastating.
It is. And those are the ones that set me back more than anything, because I'm deeply passionate, you know, about my pets. I don't have kids. They are my kids. And
yeah, me too.
So, I mean, it crushed me. I was sad. I was physically broken. I was mentally broken. I was emotionally broken.
Had you been married at this point? Had you met your wife or not?
We were dating.
Okay.
Yeah, we were dating at the time. We got married in 2020. And this was about mid-2017 when this happened. And after about a month of not getting diagnosis on my nerve damage, I hadn't trained, I hadn't done anything. I had been lying on the couch wanting to give up, just not knowing what that meant. And the thing about giving up, I kept showing up to work. And I kept showing up to life. And I kept being a part of my relationship, and I kept being a friend. And so even though it's like I wanted to give up, I think what I really just wanted was the pain to stop.
I understand that.
So I decided to sign up for a race because I needed to do something. I needed a date on the calendar, but I wasn't into it. You know, I was having a hard time training. It was kind of like Rocky III, where he's just like after Mickey died and he was just having a hard time getting his heart knit. And that was me. And I was standing outside because I used to live on Tampa Bay. So I had this house on the water. And if you've been to Florida at all, this place is flat. You can see for just thousands of miles.
Yeah.
And there's a storm rolling in off the bay. The scene was like straight out of a movie. And I'm listening to a couple motivational videos. And one of them is talking about, are you going to be a victim? Are you going to be a survivor? And I thought to myself, and I go, those are some shitty choices.
Yes.
And I said, what is the value of being a survivor? I've been, oh, Nick is such a survivor. And I was so fucking tired of hearing it. You know, here I was holding on for dear life, just getting my ass kicked. And I had to question, what is the value of surviving? What is the value? Where is the benefit of just holding on for dear life? What is the purpose of this? And I got mad and I threw a glorified temper tantrum. And I said, fuck that. I'm a warrior and I'm going to pick a fight. I'm going to do everything I should that diabetics should not. I am going to make sure that I don't squander 5 minutes on this planet because fuck cancer. I am not going to let sleep at me. I don't care how bad a night's sleep I have prevent me from living my life. I am going to defy like a rebellious teenager, all these things that are supposed to hold me back. And the power I found from doing that, that gave me this power to know like, oh my God, what I can do. When I'm not focused on excuses and when I'm not focused on all these other things. And a critical thing happened during that transformation, though, was I simply accepted everything that had happened to me and everything that was going on as my responsibility.
What does that mean? You didn't give yourself cancer. The Jewish children who were murdered by the Nazis weren't responsible for that. They didn't create it. So what does that mean that you were responsible, that you created it or that?
No, it's quite the opposite. So there's a big difference between responsibility and blame. People get too hung up on fault and blame and they advocate their responsibility, but there is nobody else's there's nobody else in the world responsible for living my life but me. There's nobody else in the world responsible for managing my diabetes but me.
Right.
I am an alcoholic. I have cancer. I accept that. I still am responsible for this hula hoop right here and everything that's inside it. What I do with this is my choice and only my choice. And I am the only one responsible. And every time if I want to blame cancer, if I want to blame the Nazis, it's taking away the little power that I have over my thoughts, words, actions, and reactions. And those are the only things we can control.
I think this is an incredible discussion. Let's jump over into sales and teaching resilience to salespeople. Because sales, as we know, depending on how you view it, if you view it, genuinely view it as service, and if people don't want the gift you offer, then that's their loss, not yours. But how do you teach? What are some of the ways, if you break it out, that you teach resilience to salespeople?
The thing you just said is so key, all right? The thing about talking about sales, right, is there's so many different industries, there's different products, services, methodologies, et cetera. So obviously everything doesn't apply, you know, to everything, but I'll say this, if you're selling something that does not provide a value for someone, I don't know how to help you. You should sell something else because you are a transaction. All you're doing is facilitating a transaction and I don't know how to help that person. That's a short-term thing. The thing that does help me is knowing, and even now as a new motivational speaker, okay, my livelihood, my mortgage, everything depends on my ability for someone to say, yes, I want to pay you to speak to our group. And so let's say this meeting that I had about an hour ago, there's a lot riding on my success here, and it would be really easy for me to carry that weight with all of it. But I firmly believe that I have a product, which is me, that will provide value to people to help them.
Absolutely.
In their lives.
Absolutely. You do.
And when I'm presenting that to somebody, right, if it's not a fit for them, oh, well. And that is how I believe sales should be. When I was in logistics, I don't want to sell you something that isn't going to help you because that's not a relationship. That's I might as well go work at 7-Eleven and sell you cigarettes. There's a, you know, so number one is just knowing that you can provide value to people and removing yourself, disconnecting yourself emotionally from the sale.
Pause a second. That's far easier said than done. So how does a salesperson do that? How do you teach people to do that? It's a great piece of advice, but what's the methodology? What's the process?
So people say that sales is a numbers game, right?
Oh, I don't think so, but go ahead.
Well, see, I think it is, but it's only a numbers game if you know your numbers.
Exactly.
And you have to understand the math. And so I grew up in to become a process-driven salesperson. I was not born that way either. I was 22 when I got into sales. I had a gift of gab. I had high energy. I was like everybody else who thought the process was bullshit. But over time, as I began to study it, right, I know that I don't need to live and die with every sale. If I know that for every three presentations I make, on average, one of them is going to buy from me, I don't need to live and die by the three presentations. Mathematically, I know what is going to happen. If I know how many calls I need to make in order to set those presentations, then I simply need to execute the plan. I need to use math and process to take myself out, not of the wholesale. That's impossible, right? Like, but out of as much of the process as I can. Like, people say they don't like scripts and process for prospecting. Those people are just way too ego-driven. I don't need to be present at all when I'm prospecting. I want to be a robot. I don't want to use my emotional stamina. We only have so much. So we want to focus it on where it counts, which is the important meetings, the ones where, you know, people buy from people. Well, you need to be present in that conversation, not every aspect of the sale along the way.
I love the way people buy from people. I have the same way, the same cadence, and the same manner of expression when I'm poking fun at a common trope that people repeat over and over and over without thinking it through. So what I think I'm hearing is you're very much process oriented. You look at the system and you look at the process. And that's something that you analyze and make sure you implement. So that actually assists you in taking your ego out of it.
Yeah. And once you, now I'm in a new position, right? Like, so I was in logistics for 20 years. I studied that forever. I knew my ratios down to the science. I could sell that to somebody. Do X, make Y. There's always levers to pull. There's always global events. There's always different things, right? But like, if you understand how your process works, why people buy from you, that's a critical part, why they will buy from you, and you focus in that niche of people who will bend the, it's like this. So this is what I would sell as a consultant, all right, when I would basically build value propositions for people, is I would have an annoying conversation with the CEO. And I mean annoying, because they say, well, we help everybody do this. And I go, I can't, no, you don't. Like, let's find the couple things that you do best. And then I would go online and I'd take all their competitors' websites and I'd give it back to them. And I say, congratulations, you said the same three things as everybody else. Let's use our brains. And what is your differentiator? What can you articulate?
Right. Because otherwise they're just a commodity. Like,
exactly.
Right.
And so a lot of times, if you have 10 companies all selling the same thing, they can still all sell the same thing, but highlight the thing that I'm best at. So once we do, what is it that we're best at? Then we need to find the people that are going to, the people who are going to benefit from the most of it and who are most likely to adopt to it. What I think a lot of people, especially in sales, they want to be able to sell to everybody. But the more you niche down, the more you are able to create value. So even in logistics, where, you know, it's a $900 billion, pushing $1 trillion business now, I want to find the $100,000 that is most likely to benefit from my product or services. So that way, that's the easiest sale to make. It just takes longer to get there. But I think a lot of people avoid the prospecting, and they try, by avoiding the prospecting, they actually make it worse on themselves, because they have to turn every cold call into a sale.
Correct.
Instead of using it what it's designed for, to find prospects.
You know, I think this applies to every area of life. It applies to dating.
Absolutely,
was previously,
right?
My prior career was a dating and pickup coach, and it's the same kind of thing where you just have to be able to be okay with the prospecting. And if you're okay, and not only okay, if you can enjoy it and have fun with it, no matter what the response, then you don't have to make each one a quote sale. It's something you learn from and you have a good time.
When I was sales training, I would use a dating example, and I say, guys, listen, I'm 5'10". I'm extraordinarily Caucasian. If I'm trying to talk to a girl who only likes 7-foot tall professional black basketball players, there's nothing that's going to change that.
You might be surprised.
work with me here. Like, that's their thing. Okay. So it's like, I don't need to be upset that I'm not their desired target. If I'm looking to hook up, I simply need to move on to someone else, or I can invest all my time into my least likely target, which I know some people like to do that, but not for nothing. I'm trying to make a lot of money here. And so I want to sell to the people who are most likely to buy my product.
That makes fantastic sense. So let me just, I've been so absorbed in what you're saying, I haven't even gone through your profile. You've answered, actually, through this discussion, you've asked all the questions that you submitted to me. Wow.
I got one for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, again, being in a new space, okay, so I was in logistics and I studied that forever, but now I'm a motivational speaker. I am the product, I am the service. And one of the hardest days for me, I don't know why, tends to be Thursdays, because I don't know what my math is. For some reason, Thursday afternoons, right? I'm clearly a high tempo person. And yeah. I find myself on Thursday afternoons sending out LinkedIn messages, all right, which is mindless. And I'm getting exhausted because, number one, it's mindless and I don't quite know my numbers yet. And right. So I feel you begin to start to feel like it's fruitless. And then you begin to start thinking you're an imposter, and then you start to get worried and nervous and you're seeing
it's a
all
shit
the
cycle.
So there's a couple things that help me, and I have a coaching program that I'm introducing specifically for remote sales teams. Now, what I'm going to tell you here can apply to almost anybody, but the reason I say remote sales teams is because having worked remote, remember 10 years ago, we hired kids out of school, right? Like 22-year-old barstool salespeople, right? High energy, high tempo, people buy from people, blah, blah, blah. And now we shove them in a closet and give them a laptop and we expect them to be the same. No wonder they're getting disconnected. So there's a couple things here for those who are remote salespeople. It applies to everybody. But number one is purpose alignment. You have to know, it doesn't matter what you're doing. It matters why you're doing it. So I spent the last 2 years in logistics and I didn't like it. And I was disconnected from corporate. I wasn't supported. I was feeling more and more on an island. And a lot of my coworkers were packing it in earlier and earlier every day, and not me. But and it's not because of my work ethic, and it's not because I cared more about the company or my future than those guys did. I didn't give two craps about the company or my boss or the product or the customers. I wanted to do this. My purpose is to overcome every obstacle and inspire others that they can too. That is my purpose. That is the reason I get out of bed in the morning. It's the reason I do hard shit. And therefore, it's the reason I did sales. And I needed that vehicle to help me do this. So I hit that with the same fervor, like I'm talking to you right now, even though I hated it.
I understand.
Aligning that purpose is critical. But then comes that second part, which is acceptance. We have certain things that we simply have to accept. I had to accept I'm a diabetic. I have to accept I have cancer. I have to accept I'm an alcoholic. I have to accept that I need money to do a job. I have to accept the situation and the circumstances that I'm in. And part of that is taking responsibility, because it's real easy to blame, oh, private equity came in and closed my office, so now I've been demoted and blah, blah, blah. And it's all their fault. Well, it might be their fault, but it's not their job to pay my mortgage. So maybe I should accept the position that I'm in.
Go ahead. I'm sorry I stepped on you. You go ahead. You're the guest.
I was just going to say, once you're able to do that, you're really dealing with a blank canvas. And that's when you begin to set epic, meaningful goals and set priorities behind them and enact some discipline. You know, when we're not holding on to anything else, when we're not forcing our expectations out in the world, when we're not so concerned with who's to blame, it frees us up to achieve good shit. And that's a critical part for me. I'm big on goal setting and I'm big on making plans. And I'm up at 4 or 5 in the morning. And from the moment I'm up, my day is structured. And it has to be. I don't like that. Okay. I am the guy who doesn't. No, I don't like, I'm the guy who doesn't like the rules. If you look at my personality assessment, I am alpha, but I know it works. And here's the thing. You only have so much mental stamina. And so if I have to ask myself many times throughout the day, what am I going to do now? I'm going to burn that mental stamina.
Correct.
Now that said, you have to remain adaptable, right? You could have, we were on the books a couple weeks ago and you had to reschedule. Like that could have thrown my whole afternoon down. Yeah. No, I just move on to the next thing. I might have to reschedule my 4 o'clock for some reason, or something else might happen. You know, as long as we have a plan that keeps us moving, and then we're aware and can adapt to the changing circumstances. The last component though comes down to self-belief. I left my job 5 months ago, 5 months ago. Cash ain't rolling in. All right. Like I know the exact moment I will be bankrupt. And I'm not worried about it because I have one 100% full faith and confidence that what I am doing has a purpose. I'm going to reach the people I need to. And in time, I will be wildly successful, and I am willing to suffer for it.
I love that word, willing. Will is not the same as willingness. I think we need to have the focus and the force, but we also have to be willing to like open our arms and say, okay, I am willing to do what it takes and to take the bruises that may come along with it. One is like a strong, steady, structured, and the other one is more, all right, here I am. Give me the bumps and bruises. I'm willing to take it. You've offered, we haven't even dove too far into the technical details of what you do, but see, this is what I want. And this is what I aim for. This is my purpose, is to have a human to human connection with a guest. Like we're having a conversation and a heart to heart. I know that my tribe is going to want to stay in the conversation with you. How did they do that?
How do they reach me?
Yeah. How do they stay in the conversation with you? What's the way they can learn more from you, get even more value than what they've gotten today?
I do have a website, stridemotivation.com. And on there, there is a landing page for all the podcasts that I've been on, as well as a speaker reel. But that's not the beauty of the content. I post every day on all my social channels at Stride Motivation, STRIDE Motivation. I post daily motivational content. I post obstacle course videos. And primarily, it's the daily content that I think is going to reach people, because it's mostly self-talk that tends to resonate. You know, I don't think I get that my story is unique, but the only thing that's really unique about it is the totality of shit that has occurred.
It's crazy.
And, you know, if you were in the obstacle course racing world, you would see that I'm not that unique. There's badass people who have gone through some tough shit tend to find their way to do things like this. And there's a lot of stories like mine.
I get it. You know, when I'm having terrible days, I call my trainer and say, can we have an extra day today? She kicks my ass so hard that everything goes away, because there's no ambiguity. You either are lifting that weight or you're not. There's no in between. I totally get it. I'm not, I can see myself developing more physically. You've been a fantastic guest. Thank you. Stay on with me for a minute or two in the green room when we're done officially broadcasting. Absolutely. This has been another wonderful, wonderful episode of The Influencer's Edge. Thank you, Nick, from the heart.
Thank you so much, Paul.
The Influencer's Edge is brought to you by the Rapid Sales Accelerator. If you're ready to skyrocket your sales by 30% or more in just 90 days, then you need to claim your free training right now. You'll learn 4 words that will compel your prospects to trust you like they were children within the first 3 to 5 minutes of any conversation across any platform and any medium. You'll learn how to give your prospects objection amnesia to crush objections like, I need to talk to my spouse, or I need more time to think it over, or it's too expensive. And finally, you'll get a free recorded audio training that will install unbelievable attitudes for success and wipe out any limiting beliefs. So if you'd like to claim your free training now, go to www.paulrossbook.com. Do it before your competition does it now. Thank you for tuning in to The Influencer's Edge, where you get the latest breakthroughs, cutting-edge insights, tools, and techniques so you can leapfrog over the pack in sales, influence, and persuasion. Remember to visit our website at www.theinfluencersedge.com to enjoy even more great episodes like this one. We look forward to seeing you again on The Influencer's Edge Show.